This is an adult-oriented podcast involving discussions about sex and the BDSM lifestyle. If you do not wish to hear about these things, or if you are under 18 years of age, stop listening now. This isn't the show for you. I torture you. Take my hand through the flames. I torture you. I'm a slave to your games. Welcome back to Adventures in Kink. I'm BK.
I'm Princess Pita.
And today, we want to announce we had a very special day that just passed.
It's our meet-iversary.
Our meet-iversary. It's the anniversary of the day that we met. And a lot of people are like, well, that's not a big deal. Well, it kind of is. If you really think about it, the date of the collar, the date of the engagement, the date of a wedding, the date of your first whatever child, if you're younger than me, because I'm not doing that anymore. But there's not another date that can possibly happen if you don't meet. And so that's probably the most important date. And so we celebrated that date.
Yes. I've always kind of kept track of that. That was the day that I tended to call our anniversary because I didn't know what else to use as a starting point. You know, it was the day we met and there was a immediate connection there. You know, we just chatted and, you know, it's, we didn't have sex the first time we met. We didn't play the first time we met. All of that stuff came much later, but the relationship between us started that day.
It started that day where there was definitely a connection that was felt.
And it just built from there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yesterday was 1 year exactly from the day that I walked into Dick's Through the Looking Glass tasting party and was introduced to a vendor who was there to sell floggers and paddles and things like that. And
nipple torture devices.
And I went and played a little bit with my friends and came back and flashed him. Because
you flashed me before you went to play.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
Oh, well, okay.
If
so
you walked up to the table, you were talking to her, and your corset was open. And I'm like, oh, boobs. And you said, psh, you didn't even speak to me yet.
And that's how our relationship started. And
that's how it starts. It all starts with boobs. Not complaining.
So 1 year yesterday.
1 year yesterday.
That's and awesome. I was hoping that we would go back to the place where we met and celebrate there. And
that's what we were hoping, yes. And unfortunately, that was not able to happen because in the interim, or in the year of growth, however you want to look at that, the place where we met was closed. And it is no longer there. Our beloved dungeon is no more.
Yeah, we talked last week about the struggles that Sanctuary's had trying to keep going in the fight. But we expressed some doubt that it was going to happen because the city seemed determined to shut us down.
I believe that I mentioned last week about how it looked like, you know, we have this one issue, and they said in their update that it seemed like all the other issues were no longer mentioned. So to me, that was a red flag that, okay, if you can tackle this hurdle, we'll pull up one of these others and we'll just take them one at a time and drag this thing out as long as possible. And I think that a lot of people in the community could see it happening because it's been since
May.
So what, 4 months? That's a long time. They've not had any income. They've had donations. They've sold off most of their dungeon furniture.
The community, you know, has done everything that they can. I mean, you can't say that we didn't try to hold it together. The community had the auction. People donated stuff. People bought stuff. People donated money. They donated their time and expertise. And, you know, we did everything that was possible to keep Sanctuary alive. And despite everyone's best efforts,
that place was run on volunteers for years. Mm-hmm. They would come and clean and not be paid. They would come and do repairs, and they would not be paid. Every now and then, they had to call a professional, and people would donate money to help pay for that. And it was open for 17 years and it was a good run. Unfortunately, it just looks like it's time to move forward to the next adventure.
I'm sad.
I'm still sick to my stomach. I have so many wonderful memories there. I met so many wonderful people there, including you.
Yeah.
I brought so many friends who are still friends to this day to different events there, and it was their first time, and they learned that they actually love this lifestyle, and the majority of them are still part of it. Most of them are still active in the Dallas area. Some of them have moved away and are still active where they've moved to. Some are not active at all, but that's their choice. People change, they evolve. And, you know, it's said that if you don't change and evolve, then you will become stagnant. And I never want us to become stagnant. So, and I don't want the Dallas community to become stagnant either. So, other than meeting me, do you have any particular memories? I know you didn't get to go very much because you weren't active in the community for very long. But
I went to my first kind of first Dallas anything at Sanctuary. I went to a core meeting because it sounded interesting and I wanted to learn about the place. And so I got to see Sanctuary then. And then I went to Bridging the Slash. I got to hear some really good speakers and meet some really amazing people. And then the first time I ever ventured out to just a play party was the night I met you. So everything after that, really, honestly, half of our relationship, the building, the getting to know each other, the first time we played, it was all there. So it breaks my heart a little bit, but I think that we'll rebuild, not Sanctuary, but we'll find a new home and that's okay. Yeah. It'll be with the same people. Because
it will be. And home is like, and you said this to me earlier, home is not a building. It's not the brick and mortar. It's not the I-beams holding up the metal roof. The home is where the people are that you care about. And the people that we care about are still here. They're just doing other things until we have a new home, a new place to go, a new venue, so to speak. So what does the Dallas community do? And we say Dallas community, of course, it's the Dallas-Fort Worth community because it's all really one big gigantic.
I mean, they call it a metroplex for a reason.
Yeah, it's a huge area that encompasses. What do we do going forward?
Well, I think things will probably maintain the status quo for a little while. House parties will continue. And hopefully the hotel parties. And I mentioned to you earlier, I'd read someone on FET had mentioned that the hotel parties are actually a really great idea. And we could do more of those on kind of a rotating hotel schedule because the hotels have different rules and regulations and privacy laws that mean that they are able to protect us a little bit.
Right.
Where, the police can't shut us down. And they're happy to have us there and rent their space.
Yes.
So that may be an option for a while, just various parties at various hotels until we can find a more permanent home. And I think eventually someone will step forward. And
I do like that plan. The hotel parties are a great idea. We do need to get a group or two maybe together to host those. Someone had talked about at one time in the community starting a BDSM furniture rental company. Might be a really good time to do that with all the house parties going on. As long as your prices are affordable, I would bet that you would have all your stuff out every week. As far as house parties go, a lot of people, understandably so, and we mentioned this as far as safety, they don't want strangers in their house. You need to be vetted. And it's so hard to be vetted if you don't have a venue to go to for people to meet you. However, there are ways to still be vetted in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Every group that has a house party has a social public social event that you can go and be vetted at. Let them meet you, let them get to know you, talk with them, and then they will invite you. I mean, the parties are posted, so, but if you don't know the people who own the house, you may not be welcome until you do. So it's important to get out and meet people if you want to go to the house parties. I know the Denton party, there's a Denton Third Thursday meetup. Everyone is welcome at Fourth Friday in Dallas. There are ways to meet people. So pay attention to the groups that are hosting house parties and see what you need to do to be vetted, because they're not going to keep it a secret. They will keep the numbers limited, though, because if you have a house crammed full of people, you can't play. And that's kind of the point of having a play party in a house, is if you have too many people, you just can't. So you have to be patient and be understanding, and maybe there'll be more house parties start popping up if people are willing to open their homes.
I mean, I think it's good that we have them, but it's not the same thing as having a dungeon, because you can't fit as many people in and you get less of the social interaction because you've got a smaller group, and then you've got multiple small groups with multiple house parties going on, so you're not interacting with all the people that you normally would. So it's a little bit different, but, you know, we have to adjust while the community is recovering and pulling itself back together, you know, for such a huge, massive community. Like the Dallas-Fort Worth area, you just said, it's massive.
It is.
And how do we have no dungeon? Like, how does that happen? It was a weird series of events, and you know, there are smaller communities.
Everything happened within a matter of months.
There's smaller communities than us that have multiple dungeons, and now we're suddenly without one. So I don't think it'll be that long. Honestly, there's a gap. There's a need that needs to be filled, and somebody's going to step up and fill that need.
I believe so.
And if I had the money, it would be me. But
absolutely. We have actually talked about it, but
we have a plan. So, you know, if anybody wants to just give us money, no, I'm just kidding. You know, if we were ever to win the lottery or stumble across a significant sum of money, we've got a great plan for opening a dungeon. We just don't have the means right now.
All of our extra money is pretty much going to fund this podcast, which we have the WordPress site now. You know, if people were to donate to the show, then we would greatly appreciate it and leave it in the show and not put it right in our pocket, because this is a community thing, not just the Dallas community, but hopefully everywhere. And I know we talk specifically about Dallas. That's because we're here. And that's where we go. But that doesn't mean that we won't travel. We would travel.
Yeah.
We would gladly go
other
places.
We'll talk about those communities.
Absolutely would. So with all of these things, some people will probably be more encouraged to go out in public and maybe meet people privately, which, stranger danger, keep that in mind, meet them in public. But if you're going to do these things, you need a safe call. We've talked about this many times. And I'm going to point out once again that House of the Faithful Dragons, our very good friends in that wonderful house, are offering safe calls as a service to the community. And I'm going to do this now. We're going to have a spot for them at the end of every episode from here on until they ask us to stop doing it. Just give them the date and time, the location, names of people involved. They'll contact you at a prearranged time via text or call to get the all clear from you, or summon the police on your behalf if you cannot. 972-591-3730 from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Outside of those hours, someone will call you back as soon as possible. The photo of the business card I'm holding in my hand is on the WordPress site. It is included with the episode number 5 notes.
Yes.
And so if you go to the WordPress site and go to blogs, it's just notes from the show. They will be filled out further. I just put something up there and all the important details, just skimmed on them for now, because we're going to go back and put that on there as we go and as time allows, because time is, we don't have lots of that right now, do we?
Yeah. No, finding time to put this podcast together is sometimes challenging with the We talked before about how our schedules sometimes just do not line up. And
yeah.
I mean, I worked all day yesterday. You worked the next 7 days after today.
Right. It's after today, crazy. I worked 7 days straight. We obviously don't have a guest this week. And if I'm working the next 7 days, that means that the day the next podcast comes out, I'll be working. So somehow in the next 7 days, not only do we have to do everyday life things, but we have to find some way to record an episode.
We'll make it work.
And somehow we're going to make that work. But it's going to be extremely difficult to have a guest. So after that time, I'm going to take it upon myself to maybe have some interviews. And I don't necessarily want to do those interviews without my Princess Peeta, but I would have off time during the week when some other people are available to talk to, and then we can bring you some more content other than just us rambling. So we have some pretty good shows planned for the future, but you know, time has been a thing. Okay, enough doom and gloom. Let's not talk about sad things anymore. Let's talk about a happy thing.
Okay.
With our anniversary yesterday, something else happened.
Yay.
You went from having your training collar to having your permanent real collar.
I did.
You did. You earned that, by the way.
I love it.
Well, good, because I love you. And the thing that is significant to me is that so many people that I have seen over the years, especially now after a 50 Shades thing happened, is you see people wearing collars that have no idea what they mean. Some people have an idea what they mean, but they wear them, but they've either given them to themselves, which you can do that, but you got to be very clear about you did it to yourself because you own you and your future. But if you just wear a collar to be wearing it as part of your ensemble, there are a lot of people who will not put one on if they do not earn it.
Because it loses all significance exactly. When you just wear a collar for the sake of having a collar.
A lot of people will go through a lot of trouble to earn a collar, some more than others. But I'm saying that it's very significant. It is as significant to a BDSM relationship as a wedding ring is in the vanilla world. It is significant. It signifies that relationship.
It's a commitment.
It's a commitment to each other. You've committed to me your service and everything, and I have committed to you protection and helping you grow, and it's a commitment. And for someone to just put one on because...
It's kind of insulting.
It's kind of insulting to those who go through all the trouble to earn it. Now, that's not saying that someone can't have one. I know people who wear them that it wasn't necessarily given to them by a particular person, but they are committed to one or two specific people, and whether they may be collared by them or not is not necessarily the case. What the thing is they don't want others to think that they're available.
Right. And then it still has significance.
It still has significance. So there's a fine line. So
there are, and there are also a group of people who wear collars for play, and it helps them transition between their vanilla self and their BDSM right. self. And that's a different thing too. You know, if you have a collar, it's a play collar. You wear it when you play and you don't when you're not there. That's fine. It's right. a different meaning. It's a different thing. What bothers me, you know, media talks a lot about cultural appropriation.
Right.
And you know, that whole, like, it's usually a racial issue, but it kind of almost seems the same way when you see people out in vanilla world wearing collars, because chokers have come back, but they look more like collars now than they did.
Yes, they do.
And so it seems a bit like cultural appropriation to me. And it's following from that 50 Shades thing, I think.
I think it is. I think that they're trying to latch on. And they're definitely making money doing it.
I mean, it's fashion rather than
a fashion statement.
Significant.
Rather than a significance. So everyone should wear a wedding band, whether they're married or not. Because it's now a fashion statement. And we are reclaiming our collars.
I don't know. I'm happy to have mine.
I'm glad that
we waited and built our relationship first, because it makes it a lot more significant.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that I was able to give it to you. And your training collar, you were very, very adamant that you not lose it, because that was part of your growth. And I think that your solution for what to do with it was absolutely perfect.
It's my bear that you also gave me.
Yeah.
Wears it as a collar now.
Yeah.
So it works.
It does. And yeah, your collar is not worn around your neck, but that's because of your profession.
Right.
So it's kind of like Pirates of the Caribbean when they had pieces of eight. And, you know, they made the comment, well, we couldn't very well say eight pieces of whatever we had laying around because we were dirt poor. It can be anything that is of significance. It can be a necklace.
A tattoo.
It can be a tattoo, which is extremely permanent. So you're going to have to really work on that relationship forever. It could be a bracelet. It could be an anklet. It could even be a brooch. But whatever it is, it needs to be significant to you and your relationship.
My collar is a bracelet that BK made himself. It's chainmail. It's green on one side and blue on the other, because one is my favorite color and the other is his. And he adds charms to it when there's different significant things to us. So it's really cool. And my training collar was similar, except it was
the blue and green were rubber.
The blue
rings.
And green were rubber instead of, now they're metal. So this one is literally more permanent than the other one, which was stretching and starting to wear out. But I love my collar. I'll post a picture of it.
You did post a picture of it.
Well, I did on FET, but I'll post a picture on the
WordPress.
Yes.
Okay, good. Do we have anything else that we need to discuss?
We can talk about the book.
Yeah. Book Club, Chapter 2.
I was so excited.
Screw the roses. Send me the thorns.
Yes. Screw the roses. Send me the thorns. And I really, really enjoyed the first chapter. If you listened to the last episode, know that.
We both enjoyed it. The humor was really good. The wit, it was really good. And then we get into Chapter 2.
So I think my problem with Chapter 2 is when we were reading through chapter one, we talked about the only real issue we had with chapter one was their overemphasis on how sex is the key to sadomasochism. And we feel like, God, it's so much more than sex. It encompasses, sex is a small part of BDSM as far as we are concerned. It enhances, but there's just so much more to it. And the reason chapter two, I think, bothers me is because it focuses on the sexual part. And since that part is the part that bothered me about the first chapter, I think the whole second chapter just kind of rubs me the wrong way.
I agree completely. The whole emphasis of chapter two is sex. And they come out pretty much explicitly say SM, however it is they worded it, is sexual magic.
That is the title of the chapter.
That is the title of the chapter. Sexual magic. Why we do that voodoo. And they even go so far as to include a scene.
Oh, God, that scene.
I'm reminded from that scene of the first time almost that they played in 50 Shades of Grey. The first movie I saw it, I could not read the book.
Well, it's because it was garbage.
So horribly written, I couldn't get through it. I watched the movie, the first one. If you go and you're well-versed in BDSM, it will be the best comedy you have ever seen. I have not seen the second one.
You realize I still haven't even seen the first one.
I know. We need to fix that because it is good for a laugh. I'm serious. Every time they play in that movie, which I think is twice, maybe three, I don't, it's been over a year since I've seen it because, and I've only seen it once. I think every time they play, like he'll have a flogger, three hits, and then there's sex. I'm sorry, three hits is, I've been overdoing this thing for years and years and years because I had arguments with people that that's not real BDSM. And oh my gosh, yes it is. You're no Christian Grey. I said, thank you for that compliment. And then they never spoke to me again because he is the uber dom. Oh my gosh.
If you stopped flogging me after three hits, I would probably kill you. Okay, not kill you, but I would be mad.
Do you think I could stop after three hits? I have problems stopping after 3 hours sometimes. Lately, that's not the case because I'm out of practice. But plus, the whole no dungeon, we don't have time to play. And so your endurance for that is diminished somewhat.
That made me mad.
Well, don't be mad about it. Be glad it's like starting over and you get to experience everything new again.
Playing yesterday was like brand new, fresh skin. Everything was a little heightened sensation because it had been so long.
That's the second time we've played since the last time we were at the dungeon, wasn't it?
God, yeah.
That's awful. That's horrible.
This is bad.
Since April, we've played twice.
Wow.
So clearly, it's more than just the play.
You're right.
But it's not all about the sex.
No, it's not. So anyway, this scene
in
this book, oh my God, it's like bad porn.
It is.
It is so horrible. I mean, if you're into reading erotica, then you might enjoy the three pages of basically him fondling her.
Right.
With a little bit of sex at the end. But, oh my God, I was having trouble reading it. It was so bad.
It was the whole how it was coming about that now when they went into breaking it down and explaining some things,
it was better, but
parts of that you can take and you can use that as far as, there's some good information there. Like during the scene when he made the suggestion where she's squirming around, do you need me to tie it to the bed? Would that help? Well, that was, she let him know that that was always her fantasy. So of course she wanted that because that was exactly what she was fantasizing and it just turned her on even more. So if you know someone and what they've have an interest in, you can incorporate that into a scene and it can be hotter. It also shows that you've paid attention to them and there's a connection. Right. That you're not just there for one goal. It's a mutual thing. You're trying to help them reach a certain place mentally and be okay with it because, she was always afraid she was a freak or something because she had these desires and he let her know that it was okay.
Yes.
And when she experienced it, it really was everything she thought and more. And I know it was a hypothetical story and scene, but I have seen that play out. And not with just sex, with other forms of play. Just bondage in general. Oh my God, it's so wonderful and cozy and warm and I'm in a happy place.
I mean, most of us who, bondage was one of our first fantasies that could be considered BDSM, we didn't need a lot of time to adjust to the sensations once we finally got to try it. It was, okay, that feels good. This is home. You know what I mean? That's what we'd always imagine. Now, I'm sure there are some people who fantasize about bondage and then get tied up and are like, oh, nope, not for me. Wasn't expecting to feel so claustrophobic. But, for me, even though I get claustrophobic, I have issues with confined spaces. I've never felt that way with rope.
I can see that. I know some people the same thing. And I think what I've determined myself, again, not a therapist. I'm not a professional anything other than sadist. And apparently pretty good at being your dom. But
yay.
So the bondage doesn't affect claustrophobia because you don't feel like everything's closing in around you because your head is usually free and you can still move your head somewhat. depending on the tie.
Right.
But because of that, you can look and there's no walls closing in on you and you're not in a confined space, just you are confined.
That could be part of it. I think part of it is also that when you're, for the most part, when you do bondage like that, you're with somebody that you trust.
Right.
So you're not alone. You know that if something were to start going wrong, somebody would get you out of that situation. Like, and I think that's really the key of everything that we do, is trusting that the person that you are playing with won't let things go too far. They're in control of the situation, and you are trusting them to have your best interests at heart and maintain that control so that you are safe.
Yes. I think that's the other part of it.
So anyway, if your style of BDSM is more on the erotic side, basically this scene is definitely for you. It's more about controlling her reactions, him exerting his dominance by planning out the scene, controlling himself, holding back.
There's good information with that can be relayed to any scene.
Right. And you know, it's not horrible. It's not my style of erotica. It's not something I would choose to read because it seemed a little bit over the top. But
there are things you can take away from it, like plan out your scene, know some of what their fantasies are as far as if it's sexual or if it's a non-sexual thing, like with just bondage. And
ramp up the anticipation.
Don't just jump in there, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and it's all over. Make it, you know, draw it out and make it an experience that will actually send them someplace. They talk about NASA's full at work with in the BDSM world.
Yeah, it basically said NASA has its challenges, but BDSM is sending people to space on a regular basis.
Yeah. And the whole Elmer Fudd cartoon in this chapter.
Oh, my God.
I think that really is what pushed us over the edge. Elmer Fudd.
I am all for education. And I have a problem with using too many euphemisms for genitalia. Because there is no reason why you can't use. And we have already common euphemisms. Like we say pussy. You know, that's already a common phrase. We don't need to say things like twizzling your tweezle. I mean, what even is that?
Twizzling your tweezle. Babe, would you bring me a Twizzler? I need to twizzle your tweezle.
I may never eat Twizzlers again.
I doubt that.
But, you know, so I have a little bit of a problem with overdoing the euphemisms for body parts, but... yes, there's a picture of a poorly drawn Elmer Fudd with Acme vice grips.
It says that on the vice grips.
And it says, twist your tweezle, tell your friend what it wants. And I just want to...
And at that point, I was like, oh, wow, why are we doing this book? But I know that there's more good information in there, but... And as it is with most things in life, you have to take the good with the bad.
I think that is really bad. Supposed to be funny. But
it is. And we just probably groaned. When that was on TV, Bugs Bunny and all that, it was probably funnier.
Okay. So then once you get past the three pages of sex, it actually goes into like things that are important for they call it fundamental elements of the art of SM. Okay, so the first is trust and communication, which I think we all agree is key to
definitely key
BDSM. And then it goes into detail about how you have to talk to your partner. Things change, people grow, people's interests change. If you don't keep those lines of communication open and tell your partner when something feels good, when something doesn't feel good, then you know you could spend the next 20 years with them doing that thing that
you don't
really like because you never spoke up and said, hey, that's not my favorite.
And you know, that goes back to what I said earlier about if you don't grow, you'll become stagnant.
Yes.
20 years of enduring things that you can't stand. Talk about stagnant.
Yeah. But you know, for some of us who are actually, I mean, SM stands for sadomasochism. Sometimes part of the things you don't like are part of the fun because,
well,
sadist, masochist.
Sometimes you may not like it when it's happening,
but you enjoy the
you enjoy the after effect of it.
And they also talk about, like, when you're communicating, be respectful. Don't laugh at each other's fantasies or fetishes. Make sure you're actually listening to what they are trying to say, because sometimes people don't, they have trouble saying what exactly they mean. So keep the arguments out of it. Listen to what they're saying to you, even if, you know, it doesn't make you feel so good, because that thing that they don't like is your favorite thing to do. You got to listen to your partner and actually communicate with them and maybe find a compromise, something that you both enjoy.
Communication? What?
And then after the talking, learning the body that you want to bludgeon. You know, all this time they've only been talking about sex, and now suddenly we're bludgeoning bodies.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm all for. Woohoo.
Same.
Then it talks about massage for like a page.
And how they're not the end all to massage. There are plenty of other books. Thousands, as a matter of fact, they list lots of numbers. And I'm like, I think they just needed to fill some space with numbers. I don't know.
But they just talk about massage as a gateway to learning the little places on your partner's body that make them jump and squirm and giggle. And
I'm for that. I'm definitely for that. Also, they give you a recipe for a cuddling oil. You use whatever you would like. You don't have to use their recipe. It's not the end-all massage oil.
The mind as an erogenous zone.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's definitely true. And it's a very, very small paragraph that they have in here. But I think that, you know, they say the mind is the greatest sex organ
that
we have.
The brain is the largest sex organ.
Because you can make a lot happen with just...
Oh, definitely.
Fantasy and
there's nothing that happens in reality that you don't think of first.
True. And I think the reason that little section is so small is because they actually delve into that more when they talk about ramping up anticipation.
Yes.
By telling a partner what you're going to do to them. Because while spontaneity and surprises are good and fun, sometimes it's just as powerful to, you know, at some point during this week, I'm going to hit you with this paddle.
And, you know, during a scene, if you have them blindfolded especially, you can say, and now I'm going to take this very large knife that you saw, and I'm going to rake it down your back. And then you use your finger instead. The sensation for a moment, until they realize that's not that knife, will be, that's that knife.
Mind fucking.
I mean,
you tell somebody at the beginning of a scene that you're going to bite them on the ass, that may be the only thing they think about for the entirety of that scene. Just saying.
Not a flashback at all, is it?
Maybe. Anticipation is a good thing. They talk about conditioning, which is not something I've really experienced. I know that there are people who do this. They train their partners to come on command. To experience, they talk about how you can like train someone to transference of feeling, like what they're feeling on their back, they're also feeling like on their breast or something like that.
I've seen this done. I have done this to some extent. I know people who learn to come on command, and it takes time, more time with some. Some never get there, but I know some, and there's one person. You could touch them on their shoulder and they would feel it on their clitoris. And so you could sit there and rub their shoulder for a few seconds and all of a sudden they were asking permission to come. And then I found out what was going on. It was they had been conditioned, and it was because they like to hug people. And when you hug, you typically go over that way. And every hug was, and then they loved hugging even more.
I can't imagine, because
I think there's some hypnosis involved with some of that. That's part of conditioning, but training yourself to do it, it's a lot harder because it's you making your mind do something that's not natural.
I just have a very hard time picturing it, and I believe that it happens, and I believe that there are people who can do it. I just have a really hard time imagining it myself because I'm very strong-willed, incredibly stubborn and strong-willed.
No.
So I can't imagine somebody, especially at my advanced age, somebody trying to convince my
Don't
body to do
something.
Don't say you're
advanced age. You make it sound like you're 90 or something. You're not old.
I just think I might be a little set in my ways, though. So
you may be set in your ways, but you're not old.
Okay.
And you can still learn things. You learn things all the time. That's why you still go to school and stuff. I mean, you're still getting degrees, for crying out loud.
PhD next.
Yeah. Dr. Peta.
Oh, I would have to change my pet name if that happened.
Dr. Princess.
No. And as an aside, before we get into the other things, I mean, I changed my pet name because our relationship changed and grew, and it felt more like, you know, you call me princess, and that, and the
right.
PETA part actually stands for pain in the ass because I'm also bratty. But boy, does it annoy the ever-living crap out of me when some random person on FET sends me a message and says, "Hi, princess." I'm like, you don't get to call me princess.
Does it say in your profile explicitly, do not call me princess?
No. And it's my own fault because I put it in my FET name, so I'm kind of regretting that a little bit right now just because a couple people have done it and it annoys me. But, you know, that's my own thing. So if at some point I decide to change my name again, don't hold it against me.
Yeah. You're probably stuck with this one for a little while yet.
Okay.
So back to the book.
Visualization. It talks about storytelling as a segue into ramping up tension and even including storytelling as part of the scene, you know.
Okay.
Their example was, as he's tying her up, he's telling her basically a fantasy that's ramping up in tension and anticipation. And then they abruptly end it and tell us to put our own happy ending on it. So it's just basically verbalizing fantasy.
Yeah. I have some thoughts on that, telling stories.
You've done that for me.
During a scene. I have done that to you. But I have some others. Some you would enjoy, some you might not. But
it you know, that art of telling a story to ramp up your partner's energy and tension and all that. I mean, it depends on knowing your partner pretty
right.
well too, because you got to know what actually is going to get them going.
If we ever have time, and I'm putting this out here for the world to hear and know, if we have time and we're rested and we have like several hours, I am going to tie you up in the Hogwarts dungeon.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
I can
because
be
I will
that.
Be telling stories. There will be narrative. I may pre-record stuff and play it as we do it.
That sounds like fun.
I thought you might think so.
I think we should use our Slytherin green rope.
I think we shall.
Okay.
I believe we're going to use, you're going to probably end up in a Slytherin schoolgirl skirt. And I'm going to tie you up with your Slytherin green rope. And then I'm probably going to beat you with a Gryffindor flogger.
Nice.
And maybe a Ravenclaw. Use Ravenclaw talons.
Like the Eagle Claw,
yeah.
The talons. That'd be cool.
Yeah. I have some thoughts.
I mean, I don't know what you would do with Hufflepuff because badgers are just scary.
I don't know. I'll
we'll
come
have
up
to
with
come,
it.
Yeah, you'll have to come
up
with something.
It.
I'm down. So, yeah, fantasy.
Yeah.
Storytelling.
It's a thing.
Yes.
And now your mind is in anticipation mode.
Yes. And like, it could be for a long while because
kids
free weekends are rare.
Here's $50. Go to the movies.
For the weekend.
See all the movies.
All right. Sensory relocation. That's, oh, we just talked
about
that. That's the
transference.
Transferring the feeling. And then dominance and submission, which, you know, I think is a really important part of what we do.
Absolutely.
Not everybody plays with power exchange, right?
Not everyone plays with power exchange. If it's a pickup play, it's usually just sensation. There's not a lot of power exchange there. If it's someone that was started as pickup play and it has become a regular play partner, a little power exchange may be there. But that's where you get into the difference between top and bottom and
which
whatnot.
We talked about last week.
We talked about in the first chapter a little bit. And they're going to hit on that more later in the book, I think.
So the dominance and submission is usually more within a relationship.
Right. And that's usually how we describe that when people ask, what's the difference between a top and a bottom versus a dom and a sub or master and a slave? And those terms are not unique to each other. Master is a title that's earned. Dom is...
Slave usually is too.
Slave usually is too. However, some people identify as a slave.
But the collar is earned.
The collar is earned. Right. That's a very unique distinction. You have some slave tendencies, but you are definitely not a slave.
Right. I'm submissive with slave tendencies.
Submissive. You have that service heart where you're very service oriented. I could see you as a very good service slave. However, I don't think that you would be able to completely wrap your head around the idea of slave as a whole because it's giving up more of yourself than I think you're able to give up. Maybe one day you might, but...
But since that would have to be something that both of us
right.
are wanting because this is a relationship and not a
right.
one person running
exactly.
the show.
Yes. I think that the best one that best suits you is just mine.
And that works for me.
Because it's what we're working on and what we're growing towards. And that's what, and likewise, my relationship with you, I think is more mine from you, but with a capital M. And I think that's kind of where we are. And it's not that you top...
No.
Although when we got that violet wand, you wanted to try it and see what it looked like. And blah,
I
blah,
did.
Blah. Yeah, you did.
So I've never had any toppy tendencies until you handed me a violet wand and I got
it's
to...
Because you like electricity, apparently.
I do.
A lot.
That's the engineer in me.
Well, you know, I knew I would find toys that you would like have a deep personal connection with without... So now we have a small beginner violet wand and now I'm pretty sure we're going to have a full big ginormous set of massive violent
at some one. Point
at some point not next week but you know because money but yeah I'm sure that we will at one point and then you're gonna love everything that comes of that toy until that toy dies and then we're probably gonna have a proper burial for it.
Well, I mean, I could see that being, you know, the one thing that we talked about, how some people are completely submissive, completely bottom, but have that one thing they like to talk
right.
with. I could see that being mine. Yeah.
And I could see you doing that. You know, like we have some friends, they top with fire. That's what they do. But they bottom for everything else from their respective people.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust myself to top with fire. I love bottoming for fire, but I wouldn't.
But you would definitely give a tasting of a violet wand.
Oh, yeah.
You might get a little out of hand with it because you get excited.
I would not.
You got a little excited. You turned it all the way up on me.
You couldn't feel it when it was lower.
I couldn't feel it when it was all the way up either.
We're going to have to do something about that.
Yeah, I'm a tough old bastard, I know.
So anyway, the last little section is on dominance and submission. And it basically just talks about what attracts people to dominance and submission. The submissive being able to let go and trust the dominant and not have to worry about anything or take care of anything or worry about performing or being competitive with other people. They can just let go and let the dominant be in charge and control the scene and control their body. And she can release all her inhibitions and stress and just trust. And then on the dominant side, it says it's a power trip. The dominant gets to be creative and let their inner demons play a little bit. They get to set the mood, control the action, employ the props. It's liberating and it feeds their ego a little bit. They get to just be in control of a human body. But it also talks about, you know, how a dominant dominates depends on what makes that submissive feel good. So you have to, it's that communication again, you know, and reading her body and listen to what she says or you know, and then adjusting the domination to that submissive. So, oh, and your favorite part, it specifically says if a dominant is using props, they should be an expert with the props that they handle.
Yes. If you're going to swing a whip at a person that you are hoping will satisfy a sexual need or whatever need for you, please know how to handle that whip, or you will be handling them in the emergency room explaining that you're a dumbass and you hit someone with something you did not know how to use. I'm getting off my soapbox now.
Okay. But yeah, they said that, you know, not knowing the props that you're using is dangerous and for the submissive, but it's also, you know, it ruins the moment and makes the sub afraid to trust you. And, yeah. And I guarantee you, will lose you.
Fastest way to lose trust.
Not only will that sub be afraid to trust you, but everyone they know.
Everyone they know and everyone they know.
Yes. So don't use toys you don't know how to use. And then it just goes into, you know, not all fantasies translate well to reality. So, you know, part of the dominant's job is making sure that the submissive understands that, you know, everything they want is not going to play out the way that they're picturing, because that isn't realistic. And then in the end, you make concessions. Sometimes, or eventually, the fantasy wears on your nerves or gets boring, or it says let your roles develop naturally. You'll find the right level for your relationship if you stay flexible, communicate, and go slow. So, and then they're going to cover more of that later. So that's the end of the chapter.
All right. Well, we've discussed chapter 2. We'll discuss chapter 3 next week.
Hope it gets a little bit.
I'm sure it will. Better. I think we're going to start getting into more specific topics. And again, we're not looking ahead.
The second half of chapter 2 was good. It had informative. It was informative. It had some interesting stuff in there. You know, I only didn't like the very beginning because got 3 pages for that sex scene. So it was a little bit much, just for me.
Sex was a bit much on that scene because it seemed to be focused on that as the end goal and not helping her expand a horizon or expand. Now,
if I was playing with you, sex would be part of a scene, and that's totally fine.
Right.
If I'm playing with anyone else, that's completely off the menu for me. So it can't just be about sex.
I reserve sex for those that are very close, intimate friends. And it has to be a part of that scene and planned out. And I mean, it has to be okay with everyone involved. It's not just going to be, hey, we're gonna have sex, but we're going to make a production out of it.
Right.
Because that's what it felt like to me. And that's not the case. And no more often than I include sex in a scene with other than the person that I'm living with. You know, it's not a regular thing at all. It just doesn't happen. Just because I'm poly doesn't mean I'm having sex with everyone out there. Right. That's not what that means.
And I know not everybody is wired the same way that I am, but for me, sex needs a relationship.
There needs to be a relationship and a good deep connection, right?
Yeah. I just can't. I don't do random sex. I never have. Not even as a teenager, young adult. There was always some kind of connection relationship there. So that's just me. No shame to people who do have random sex. That's your thing.
It has its place. Totally, it has its place. Some people are fine with that. You know, some people are fine with chocolate chip cookies. Some people prefer oatmeal.
Actually, put those things together, I'll be happy.
You put the chocolate chips instead of raisins in your oatmeal cookie?
I love chocolate chip oatmeal cookies. How are you just learning this about me?
Because we've only made cookies once.
And that is a story for another day.
That is another episode entirely.
That was fun, though.
It was, and it will happen again.
Yay.
So on that note, I will say keep up your kinky ways, and we will be back next week. I hope you have a kinky week.
Thanks for joining us.
Let a Dragon be your safe call. House of the Faithful Dragons is offering Safe Call as a service Just call them and give them the details, the date and time, the location, the names of the people involved, and they'll contact you with a prearranged time via text or call to get the all clear from you or to summon the police on your behalf if you cannot. 972-591-3730. That's 972-591-3730 from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Central Time. Outside of these hours, someone will call you back as soon as possible. That's 972-591-3730 between 8 a.m. and 11 p.m. Central Time, and let a dragon be your safe call. You know how you like your rope. Our friends at Minawashi cater to those that are particular about their rope and choose to condition it themselves. Let them provide you the highest quality unfinished jute rope so you can have your rope your way. Custom rope available upon request. Go to www.mynawashi.com. That's www.mynawashi.com. Or email them at mynawashi@gmail.com.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Statistics show 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, and it affects many others, family, friends, and loved ones. Breast cancer is the second leading cause of death among women. To help the fight and raise awareness this October, Minawashi Rope, along with a collection of rope vendors, will be donating 20% of all sales from their pink rope and pink rope kits to their favorite breast cancer charity to help eradicate this disease. Head to www.pinkropes.com to find Pink Rope campaign products. I torture you, take my hand.